This is F1 Debrief episode 99, He Could Walk and Talk for a Start. Coming up this week, we discuss the first race of the new season, oh so many protests, and the BBC coverage.
Rumour has it that you, young lady, have been talking a lot.
I have been talking so much, I have a really sore throat.
How many podcasts have you put out in the last week?
Quite a few.
All I seem to hear is your voice talking. It's like being blooming married to you.
And I was trying to catch up.
Never shut up.
I was trying to catch up on some transcripts and I got bored of my own voice.
Is it any wonder you've got a sore throat? Are you going to make it through this show?
Yes.
Okay, shall we get cracking?
Yes. Good week, bad week. It's been a good week for Alex Wurz as he is still linked with Braun GP. There was talk earlier that he might be suing the team for breach of contract.
Didn't hear that.
Well, I read it somewhere, but I can't remember where.
Then you're not going to be able to quote your sources.
No.
Alrighty.
But now he will remain with them as an advisor. It also looks as though he was their reserve driver in Australia, which makes me wonder whether Davidson has been relegated from that role now.
Well, Davidson was talking on the radio and he seemed to think he was the third driver.
Mm.
So how many do they need?
It's been a bad week for Wembley Stadium as the Race of Champions organisers have decided to move the event elsewhere. They said that spectator numbers were dropping, so they'll be moving on and have five different options to choose from. The new venue will be announced in the next few weeks. They said it could be in the UK, but I don't know where else they could hold it. They're also going to run it earlier, presumably learning from the fact that most people who attended in December pretty much turned to blocks of ice.
They looked freezing, didn't they? Where else in the UK? Maybe Cardiff. Might be the host in Cardiff. There aren't that many venues, and I'd be amazed if they want to, because it just didn't garner enough interest. I mean, there were adverts all over the UK. They've tarmacked Wembley. That was the headline. A great advertising campaign, and nobody was bothered. So I just don't think it's the right place to host such an event. In the comments, RG said he'd like to see it at St. James's Park.
And Lukey said they hold the Welsh Rally GP in the Millennium Stadium, so it could happen. It's been a good week for anyone confused about race strategies as we got our first glimpse of how the publishing race fuel loads ruling is going to work. I think it's fair to say we're not really fans of the idea, but if the information is out there, we're going to use it. We're actually holding a poll on sidepodcast.com at the moment, whether it's a good idea or not. So if you haven't already, you can go along and register your vote.
We shall put a link in the show notes.
Absolutely.
It's a good debate, actually. I started with one opinion. I sort of moved to the middle ground. I still think it's taken a little bit away from what we do on Saturday evening, which is speculate on who might be running late and who might be bluffing.
Well, I think instead of speculating, now we're looking at it with hard evidence, which obviously you can only do for so long.
Yep.
Because the information is there.
Yes.
So it does take a little bit away, but it is good to see it.
And what I was curious about is that a lot of people made some predictions on where they thought the cars would finish based on the fuel loads they were carrying. And of those predictions, a lot of people overstretched them and the cars came in earlier than expected. So it's still not a science. There's still a bit of an art form and it's still some unknowns involved in knowing what these fuel loads are.
I think it's not all about the fuel loads, is it? Because there were tyre issues today, but we'll get onto that later. It's been a bad week for Williams as they withdrew a protest in Australia, only to hope the FIA still look into it. Over the weekend, they lodged a protest against Ferrari and Red Bull, something to do with the side pods. But after the stewards had been looking into it for a couple of hours, they pulled their complaint, saying it was in the interests of the sport to do so. However, then they came out and said they hope the FIA will still review those two car designs. So why didn't they just carry on with it?
Go figure what the hell all this was about. I cannot fathom what they were trying to do.
Were they just trying to hit back? Because they're being protested against.
Yes, that's one way of looking at it. I don't understand why, if they did that, they didn't pull the complaint earlier. Why did they have to wait until midnight? It was about 4 or 5 hours before they decided, actually, we're not going to go ahead with this. And the stewards have been debating it and deliberating about it for ages. So it's a bit weird.
It's weird that they pulled it, and then it's weird that they're saying, well, we hope the FIA still review it.
Yeah, what you'd normally do is mention it to a journalist who would run it as a story, and that would be enough. So I'm not entirely sure why they've decided that they're not going to go down that route this time.
Lou suggested perhaps trying not to break up FOTA.
Okay, then
but
why protest?
Then why do it in the first place?
Yeah. FOTA's an interesting one because you've got the double-decker diffuser guys running against the single-decker diffuser guys. And as yet, no one's fallen out. You know, it's going to take a lot to split these people up. And maintaining harmony by pulling a protest doesn't seem like it's entirely necessary. News
and views. On the subject of the diffuser row, it came to a sort of head this weekend because the stewards had a good old look and ruled that they were legal.
Highly technical. They were.
He was right under the car.
He was just basically peering in there.
Yeah.
You know when you go to buy a new car and you don't really know what you're buying and you don't really know what you're looking at, but you want to pretend, you know, that you do so you don't get ripped off and you just sort of around the back of it and kick the tires.
When they open the bonnet and you go, oh yeah, looks good.
Yeah. It was that kind of thing. And there was all these stewards who I'm sure have no authority to rule either way, peering at the back of the Williams with, trying to look intelligent.
The others appealed, though, and a date was set as the 14th of April. So that means the results of this race and Malaysia are somewhat under a shadow, but we don't think they're really going to change them, do we?
Very, very difficult to know. Here's my take on it, and this is the thing that I'm taking to heart at the moment. Toyota haven't done a single exciting or dangerous or even remotely adventurous thing in the entire time that they've been in Formula One. They are not normally known for rule breaking, except for the slight infraction with the Ferrari data that they may or may not have used. Because it's Toyota, I generally think the rule book is the way it is, and therefore I don't think that this appeal will go through. I think it'll be overturned, probably on a technicality, and we'll all waste a day talking about it.
Well, what is interesting is that post race, Red Bull team principal Christian Horner suggested they might think about introducing a version of the controversial diffuser because they don't want to get left behind. He says only if it's proved legal, but surely admitting that you might bring it in already before it's been proved legal or not is just going back on the protest in the first place.
Red Bull Racing started looking into replicating the diffusers in question the day that the Toyota was announced. Swiftly followed by the Williams, we had a pretty good look at the back of the diffusers when those cars were provisionally released, and at that point all of the teams started doing some initial looks into making their rear ends match the other guys. So okay, yes, he's saying that we're looking into it, but of course they're looking into it and they've already been looking into it for a long time.
But you can't put your foot down and say that's not legal, but if it is, I want one. I can see that if it was proved legal then they could bring it in, that's fine. But aren't you just undermining your whole complaint if you're going, well, yeah, we'll bring it in?
Yes.
You just shouldn't say it now.
Isn't it a request for clarification rather than a complaint? The only problem is this is the only way that the rules can be clarified, and therefore it comes across as looking like a complaint.
Well, it is, but I just think that saying it now is undermining what they're complaining about.
Especially because we all know they're doing it.
The race. So how would you rate the race?
I don't think we could have asked for a lot more, actually. End to end, start to finish. It was all go, rarely a break. Safety cars came out at perfect times, just when things were looking to get into a kind of rhythm and looking to be a bit repetitive. They came in and shook things up, caused a bit of confusion and a bit of mayhem. As a season opener, can't fault it.
I think I may be the only person in the whole world that wasn't completely enamoured with the whole thing.
Well, really? You weren't sold on Braun 1-2?
I think it was a good race and I'm really happy that Button won because that's amazing. And it's a great story, you know, that they came from nowhere and now they're leading.
Yes.
It's great stuff. But there were things that turned me off a little bit.
Go on.
Today. I didn't like what happened with the safety car at all.
Right.
I think that made a mess of everything and it was embarrassing.
This is the first of the two safety cars.
Yeah. Because obviously the safety car came out of the pits too late, we guess.
Yeah.
Couldn't find who it was supposed to be picking up.
Nope.
Let people passed really fast.
Okay.
And then was trundling around by itself. And then Button was trundling around by himself wondering where the safety car was.
So it was embarrassing.
It was just stupid and dangerous and embarrassing. And I can't believe that happened.
We haven't got to the bottom of this yet. It's going to require some Monday investigation. If Autosport don't do it for first, then we might have to look into exactly what was going on with the lap times, where that safety car was at any point. Because it looked to all the world, to a cynic, that the safety car was being held up and not being called until Button got in to do his pit stop. Now, clearly it's a safety car and safety should come first, and I'm sure that the stewards wouldn't make that decision. It sure as hell looked like they did, though. And we do need to do some kind of analysis to find out exactly what was going on there.
It is good that drivers can pit under the safety car now, though.
Yes.
So it's not quite the lottery that it was last year.
Nope, that's not a pain. Although there was a weird safety car test in one of the free practice sessions, which we couldn't really understand. It's the safety car deployed signs came out right at the end of one of the practice sessions. No one really explained what they were testing there.
No, because last year they were testing for a new system.
The yellow light system.
Yeah.
And that's not in place, is it?
No. So I guess maybe they were just practicing for the race. But if they were, obviously their practice didn't work very well.
need to work harder, I think. It was a shambles, no question about it. And questions will be asked.
The second thing that I wasn't a fan of is KERS. Now, obviously, we like the idea of KERS in general, and I want to see it brought in. We've covered this a lot. But I don't like the way it was implemented, in that some of the teams had it, some of the teams didn't. You could watch cars going around the outside of other cars because one had it and one didn't.
Right.
And then if two cars had it at the same time, we didn't know who was pressing what, who was going where. I mean, Hamilton made his way up right from the back of the grid, almost, to near the front, presumably because he had KERS and pressed his button a lot. But we would never know that.
Well.
And the commentators, there was only one moment I picked up where they said it was a Renault was being overtaken by someone, and they said, I think it was Piquet, probably had used his KERS already.
Yes.
And the other guy hadn't.
And he couldn't defend himself.
And I thought that was the only moment where they actually explained something happening with KERS,
right,
to me, and I understood it. The rest of the time, no one seemed to know what was going on.
Commentators were as clueless as us. Some last-minute KERS graphics were introduced, and...
But never explained.
They're not the most intuitive things in the world. We mentioned this, obviously, in the winter build-up, and we knew it was going to be a problem. I did like that it made a difference. That was the one thing I'd say about KERS. You're right. I mean, Lewis Hamilton drove a great race and he kept his nose clean, and that's why he ended up where he did, whilst others made lots and lots of silly mistakes. However, he was assisted by his KERS system, and the have-nots very soon will become haves now that they've seen this race. I'm sure they're going to look at it and think, actually, yes, there is a weight penalty to be had, but if you're starting out of position for any reason whatsoever, KERS is going to be a lifesaver. Alonso, I did see Alonso using it to defend, which was good. And it looks like Lewis did make the most out of what he had. I mean, we know his car wasn't good this weekend. He started well out of position. He was right near the back by the time his gearbox penalty was applied. And he really did optimise the package that he had under him, including the KERS system.
It doesn't make sense to me that they can mandate this fuel load thing, which is such an obvious thing that doesn't make that much difference. And yet something as fundamental as KERS, which is supposed to make all the difference to the racing this year, nobody knows what's happening.
No. It's going to be, I'll tell you what's going to be essential, I think, this year, is going to be the debriefs that come out in the days following the Grand Prix, when people have time to look at the stats and analyse what went on when, and who did what and how they did it. So it's great for the geeks. It's great
like
for the people.
Like 6 days afterwards.
Yeah, it's great for anybody who, you know, who's into post-race analysis. It's really, really hard to follow when a complicated race is unfolding before your eyes.
Do you think it will be easier if it wasn't quite so chaotic and there weren't so many safety cars and things mixed up?
If the race was boring, it would take more precedence, because in Malaysia, we're not expecting an awesome race. It's probably going to be a procession in Malaysia. KERS will have more of an effect at that circuit, and therefore I think it will be more interesting, and it'll play more of a part in the race. As it was, so much was going on, it became a sideshow to the main event.
And the last thing that I wasn't so enamoured with, it's kind of not really, because I was really happy to see the Braun guys up there.
Right.
But they were so fast. I mean, they were streaks ahead of everyone else. And I'm just worried about that.
You're worried that they're going to dominate the season?
I don't want them to dominate the season.
If Bernie's race win concept had been introduced, you could be concerned. It's going to take teams a little while to catch up with them. They are ahead. However, all the other teams were having a really good look at the bits that go into the Braun whilst he was sitting on the grid. That wouldn't have gone to waste, the information that they've gleaned from that. We know that teams are working on better diffusers and better aerodynamics. What we don't know, and what we have no real clue about, is how good Braun GP are going to be at developing their car this year. They've got an advantage because they had a head start on everybody else. They started their 2009 development so much earlier than all the other teams. What we're going to see, what's the real story of this year, is going to be how fast can Braun GP stay ahead of the competition, and will they squander that lead, and how long will it take them to do so?
It did make me feel better that the two guys that looked like they could challenge were Vettel and Kubica, until they knocked each other out, and neither of them have the dodgy diffuser.
No. Well, Red Bull, here's the thing. Adrian Newey must be so, so frustrated at this the diffuser debate. I can see why he's so miffed about it, because he has made an absolutely staggering piece of kit. That was a beautiful race car out there on the track. If he had the diffuser, I think The Red Bull would be streets ahead of everybody else. If nobody else had the diffuser, I think he also, his car would be out there at the front fighting for wins. Vettel did really well to keep in touch with the bronze. If it wasn't for one really stupid mistake, and it was a stupid mistake, and I'm going to put the blame on Vettel. I know
he did apologise afterwards. So.
He did. It was a 50-50 corner. But Kubica had such an advantage over Vettel with those tyres that he should have just yielded. He should have bagged the points and he should have brought the car home because a podium would have been fine. And now he's got nothing.
I mean, it almost looked like Vettel was braking anyway. It looked like he was going to give in, but then he just kind of didn't and they collided. So
yeah, if I was him, I would have given in earlier because Kubica had him. He made a mistake going into the first corner, which allowed Kubica to pounce. And anything after that point on dodgy tyres against a faster car, after you've already made your mistake, I think it would just be time just to lift off and let the guy go. It's not racing, but it was near the end of the Grand Prix and he needed the points. And now he just looks a little bit silly.
So that collision knocked them both out of decent points positions. And the podium was Button, Barrichello and Trulli, which was quite impressive from Trulli, who started from the pit lane.
Yeah. Well, he had a great race, actually. I think it's been a weekend of penalties and investigations and problems for Toyota guys, because obviously they had their diffusers looked at on Friday.
Yeah,
they had the rear flexible wing issue that sent them to the back of the grid in qualifying.
Yeah,
which isn't impressive. And then finally, Trulli gets this rather silly penalty at the end of the race.
So the second safety car period was right at the end of the race, and Trulli was ahead of Hamilton, and they were following.
Yes,
the safety car.
I don't think they quite caught it up at that point.
Okay, and then Trulli had to avoid Vettel, we think.
Yeah, Trulli had an off for some reason. He might have just passed Vettel. We haven't, see, there is some amateur camera footage out there on YouTube, but it isn't good enough to make any decision.
No.
You could argue that Vettel was coasting around with one wheel off his wagon, very dangerously, and Trulli may have come across him unsighted, or he may have had a problem. Anyway, whatever happened, he went off the track.
Trulli went off the track. Hamilton got past. Trulli came back on the track, and then overtook Hamilton, because obviously he felt like
I think Trulli said that Hamilton pulled aside and slowed down.
Oh, okay. So they both thought.
Yeah, I think that was the case. Whether Hamilton did it in order to trick Trulli, I don't know. But that seems... So Trulli's argument was that Hamilton basically pulled over and stopped and he had no reason to go past and no reason to think anything of it.
And afterwards, the stewards investigated the incident and gave Trulli a 25-second penalty for overtaking under the safety car.
Really, really harsh, because they were behind a safety car at the time and therefore that 25 seconds has cost them an awful lot of places, whereas normally that 25 seconds might have just cost them a place.
I think the general consensus of opinion is that, yes, it deserved a penalty, but perhaps just swapping the places back rather than chucking them out of the points altogether.
And Toyota have appealed. The weekend started off with the stewards and appeal processes, and that's how it ended. And it's to be expected. And I guess that's what we've got. I don't know whether Toyota will actually see it through and whether or not they'll pull out just like Williams did.
It is worth appealing that, though, because 3rd to 12th, I mean, that's a lot of points you're missing out on there.
Yeah, it is. Again, maybe Toyota have seen a camera angle that nobody else has. What I did enjoy during the race was we saw a camera. There was a camera pointing at Charlie Whiting and the stewards.
Yes.
First time we've seen that.
Having a cup of tea or something.
It was just chilling out, like being on TV. I've never, ever seen inside that room. Didn't know how many people were involved. We didn't get much information other than just a quick shot to say, hello, there they are. Maybe we'll see more of that in the future, but I liked what I saw.
The other penalty we saw was for Vettel, who gets a 10-place grid drop in Malaysia. I don't know if there's a bit of confusion or not on whether it's because of the crash he had with Kubica or because he went around the track with one wheel hanging off.
Yeah, I think...
It was because of the crash. It was an avoidable incident. And then the team were fined $50,000, I think,
for trying to get the guy to finish the race on three wheels, which would have been an achievement if his car hadn't given up.
10 places seems like an awful lot.
I don't know. I mean, he's in a good car. It's probably not going to hurt him. He might get into... He's got a pretty good chance of getting into Q3. And he's probably going to... You know, if he can get a light fuel load, he might end up in 10th.
I would have said, surely being knocked out is punishment enough. But obviously he took Kubica with him.
Yeah.
And Kubica says that actually he thought he could have won it because he was on the right tyres at the right time.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, Vettel had held up Kubica for so long, it does seem like it was a tall order. And we don't know how much Button had in hand before the accident happened and the safety car came out. There could have been more performance in that BMW. It didn't look like it, but, you know, they could have just been managing the situation. There was no reason for them to stretch their legs. And I don't think Kubica was really a race winner. No, he wasn't completely on for a race win in this situation.
Talking of the tyres, aside from the fact that we can't tell the difference, which is an ongoing problem, the soft tyres are shocking.
Yeah.
The gap between the compounds really is making a difference. I mean, Rosberg at one point, he was going backwards.
This is, well, that does, you know, there's two arguments. One hand makes for good racing. A guy's, yeah, you know, you've got a guy in second, and at any point he could learn four or five places, and there he is back in seventh, and that puts a nice spin on the race at the end of it. However, I just think this isn't going to work out for Bridgestone, because all we're going to hear are people talking about bad tyres. The tyre that went off, the tyre that wasn't very good.
There's no grip. The tyres are rubbish.
It's all Bridgestone's fault. You can argue that it has for more variety because, you know, the compounds were significantly different in this case, and you could tell the difference, and nobody really wanted that soft tyre. But I can just see as a marketing pitch, it's gonna come back and buy Bridgestone.
It obviously works for some people because Button didn't seem to have any problems with it at all.
I'll tell you what, this is something I was going to mention. Last year, when traction control was banned with the standard ECU, everybody said this is going to work for Button. His smooth style is really going to help it's going to benefit from not having traction control. And we didn't see any of that. We didn't see Button excel under these conditions at all. However, I do wonder if that same smooth style is getting some really good benefit out of the new slick tyres. Now we've gone from grooves last year to slicks this year. And bearing in mind, I don't think Button's ever driven an F1 car on slicks in anger in the past. I do wonder if his style doesn't really suit the way the car's set up and the way these new slick tyres require people to be very gentle, especially the soft ones, which obviously go off very quickly. And don't retain performance. And that might work in Button's favour for the rest of this season.
It's also worth mentioning who retired from this race. Both Ferraris. Both of them. That's a bad start to the season, isn't it? Kimi clouted the wall.
They have. They're one... they've squandered this race big time. Because McLaren look off the pace. McLaren still have aero problems to resolve. They are behind on their development, but they will catch up. Ferrari need to really make the most of McLaren's troubles, and today they absolutely did not.
Just threw it away.
One of them threw it away. He threw it into the wall, and a technical gremlin messed it up for the other poor soul.
PK spun off.
Dramatic.
It was good. I quite liked it. There was gravel everywhere.
Is the jury still out on whether he was completely incompetent or whether there was some kind of mechanical issue?
He said something about the brakes not working properly, but it didn't look that way.
It looked like he lost it under braking all on his own. Managed not to take anybody out in the process, but it was close.
Yep.
Quite a spectacular run through the gravel. Another non-stellar race from PK.
I mean, you can say, well, it's not that bad because obviously Kimi also hit the wall, but then Kimi doesn't hit the wall very often and PK spins off quite a lot.
Exactly. And, you know, Alonso didn't do too bad. He seriously messed up qualifying on his most important run. Last run in Q2, he went flying off at the last corner, completely screwed all of his advantage that he'd built up, and started in the middle of the pack, never fully recovered from that. He got through the first corner really cleanly, despite everybody around him having a bit of a nightmare, and then survived on Kurs for the rest of the race.
RG in the comments has said, for once, I don't think it was entirely PK's fault. So perhaps we'll leave the jury out for now.
It is still out, and we'll have to wait until Renault tell us exactly what happened. It was a peculiar exit.
Nakajima also retired and Kovalainen was out in the first lap collision. We all predicted there would be one and there was. And it meant we saw the first front wing change.
Nothing like as much as we expected. And I'll tell you what, all winter we'd be actually, since the car's first debut, since that first Williams hit the track with the fugly front wing, everybody has been saying it's going to cause mayhem.
That those first
they're
corner.
Just going to snap and break and fall off.
Yeah.
Barrichello used his like some kind of barge board. It just literally just piled his way through anybody and everybody with a massive front wing.
It was hanging off for half of the race and he still came second.
Those things are really solid. We're not going to have what we were expecting, which is, you know, first corner incidents every race and cars coming around without front wings on. They are solid as a rock.
I'm quite disappointed, actually. I've been looking forward to the first wing change all weekend.
Yes.
And I had to wait till Sunday.
I'm guessing it must be to do with putting so much downforce on the front of the car that they can just have these really strong supports and very big the very big front wings. What we did see, I think it was on Saturday, F1 Wolf was at the racetrack. He managed to get a picture of the underside of the BMW. That thing is gigantic. Compared to last year's wings, the guy carrying it was just, you know, his arms were completely outstretched. It's a massive piece of equipment, these front wings. And you're going to see more cars nerfing off the back of the guy in front, because the guy in front, his car's going to fall to pieces in his crumple zone, and the guy with the big front wing is just going to sail on past.
In the comments, Lukey just said, it's not a front wing, it's a snowplow.
The BBC is back, baby.
The coverage is much improved on last year.
BBC coverage, UK fans.
Yep.
We've been spoiled rotten.
We are lucky, and actually we have nothing to complain about now at all.
I shall do, though.
We still will.
Absolutely. Go on then. First complaints. What don't you like about this excellent, new, super fantastic, brilliant coverage that we've all got?
Personally, I wasn't that big a fan of Mr. Jordan. Everyone seems to love
Eddie
him.
Eddie Jordan.
Everyone seems to love the fact that he and Coulthard were arguing a lot. I actually found it quite uncomfortable to watch, so I didn't really like that. But presumably he will come into his own.
They are like a right old married couple.
They really are.
You'd think they've been doing it for years.
Yeah. I did like that about 10 minutes into it, Brundle came along and he was like, I'd just like to say how slick you guys are. It's like you've been doing this for years.
Yeah. No, the crew, the pit crew, the Anchorman and his cohorts, I think did a really good job. I didn't hear enough of Ted and didn't hear enough of Lee. I don't know why they didn't lean on them more. Maybe it wasn't the kind of race that needed people in the pits and needed that kind of response. I don't think Lee did as good a job as Lou would have done getting hold of drivers and interviewing them after their retirements, because we had several retirements.
I think her questions were a bit better, though.
Questions when she found the drivers?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought, I would have thought Lou would have been in there quick and she would have got hold of them, and it was just some opportunities lost there. And we didn't hear enough of Ted. He had some insights, and it's good that he's there, but we didn't see enough of him. The biggest concern, I think, was in the box.
Jonathan Ledyard seems to be splitting opinion.
He came in for some grief on Twitter. I was watching the Twitter feed mostly in qualifying, actually, and he came in for some grief. Can't say I was hugely impressed.
I didn't find him at all offensive. I think he is so BBC. It's just, generally, he got a little bit excited, but mostly it was quite bland, quite informative, nothing exciting about it.
He didn't jump up and down a lot, did he?
No.
And Brundle's not one for jumping up and down.
No. And they did, I mean, I think that he talked a lot. And so suddenly it was like, where's Brundle? We want to hear from him.
Yes. As a commentary team, I think David Croft and Anthony Davidson provided more insight. I think Davidson has more to offer than anyone else in either the radio or the television boxes. You know, we've been missing that recently. David Coulthard actually should possibly maybe be in that box. There could be three people in the television box. It needs a recent racer.
Coulthard,
some actual racing insight.
He would be good, but he wouldn't be able to keep the conversation going.
No.
Because you need, like, the journalist to be able to do that.
But you do need to have someone who's been out there recently.
Yeah.
And has a vague idea of what's going on.
There would be no harm in having three people in the box.
No, there are actually, I think there are three people in the box, because you've got Mark Hughes as a spotter, but there would probably be no harm having a fourth person in there.
A lot of the defence for Ledyard is that obviously this is his first race, he needs some time to get used to it, but didn't he used to do it before?
I don't know if he's a guy who needs that much of an introduction. And there's some people, it's just, it wasn't impressive. He's got time, it's not going to be a huge problem, I'm sure he'll get there. It just wasn't quite what it could have been.
I think,
and he was the weak link in that entire chain.
Yeah, I think the part of the problem is we saw Jake Humphrey take the anchor role.
Brilliant.
And he was amazing at it compared to Steve Ryder.
So much better.
I mean, he could walk and talk for a start. You could hear him over most of the engines. Obviously, there's not much
they're
you can do about it.
Still doing that, let's stand outside the garage while they start up the engines.
Yeah. It wasn't as bad, though. I think you could still hear them.
Must be somewhere else they can go and stand, because you know that the cars have to get to the grid and no one's going to push them. The engines are going to start and it's going to be loud. How hard is it to figure that out?
And also, it was good because you could tell he was listening to what the people were saying rather than just waiting for the next opportunity to ask a Lewis Hamilton question.
Yeah. We have to, all credit to the BBC, it wasn't the Lewis Hamilton show. Now, partly because Lewis Hamilton wasn't anywhere to be seen.
It was a little bit. The button show, actually.
It could have become that, but no, I think generally it was...
It was quite well balanced.
Unbiased. I like that Eddie Jordan is obviously from an ex-bank market team, so he has interest in the likes of what Force India are doing. He has an interest in Richard Branson, because he's tried to court the guy before. So you've got Eddie Jordan providing that back end of the grid experience. Coulthard, he's the midfield man, so he's got, you know, the interest in, and the knowledge in that area. And so it's a perfect team. It's a perfect balance.
And like you said, the only problem at the moment is Legard, but he may improve. You know, we've got to give him a chance, yes. Really. Oh. We would switch to Five Live and give him a chance to improve without us listening.
Yep.
But we don't want to miss out on Ted.
No, I'll tell you what, I'm disappointed in Miss Holly Samos. Because I'll tell you what, on Friday free practice one or two, we were listening to her.
Yeah.
Sounded like she has done no homework whatsoever. There was a quote, she said, "I've been watching these cars all winter," and you knew by the way she said it, she'd literally just been clearing up on the plane.
Yeah, I mean, she has had a baby over the winter.
I'm sure she's been busy.
Yeah, but, you know, everyone is busy. Yeah. If you're going to do the job, you need to do it properly.
Missing some basic information on 2009 regulations and what's been going on in testing, I think, which is a shame. So she was probably the weak link in the radio arm of the thing.
So if we could swap Ted in for Holly, the radio would be perfect.
Heaven, just sign me up for that right now.
It's almost possible to switch in what you want, because on the BBC you can press the red button and you can watch TV feeds on board screens and choose which commentary you want, but it's not quite pick and choose the people that you want. That would be good.
The red button stuff, oversold and under delivered too blinking slow, really slow to change feeds.
It
takes an age.
Yeah, I think we do have a really old box, so I don't know get any better.
The problem is it's bandwidth. You can't get that much information over the Freeview data streams, and it just takes too long to change feeds. It takes too long to change commentary. It was just easier to have a DAB radio beside you and turn David Croft up and the television down. It's a great idea. It's just not what it should be.
And actually, when they announced what they were going to be doing on the red button, it sounded awesome, all this different stuff.
Yeah.
But actually,
Where was it?
It didn't seem like that much. You could watch the normal feed, you could watch an on-screen, on-board camera, yep. And you could flip between three different commentaries, and that was it.
There was a missing piece, and a piece of paper that I have the information on is not in this room, so I can't quote from it, but there is something that was promised, which would be a multi-screen option, which would have a leaderboard and several angles. I couldn't find it, so I don't know if anybody else found it and whether we missed it, but it was promised and it wasn't there, and that would have been good to see. The onboard camera is blooming hopeless. It is useless as a chocolate teapot. It really is of no interest to anybody whatsoever. It's not controllable, and it's just not what it should be.
I wouldn't want to watch that really anyway, because you might miss something.
It's only useful as an additional feed. It can't be the sole feed. So unless you've got two televisions or you're playing it on your laptop or whatever, it's
multi-screen.
Yeah, it's just not quite. So in terms of technology, the potential didn't live up to the potential. The people, absolutely,
and you know, the graphics and the montages and everything they produced was amazing,
also very good. Credit to them. I really like the track preview where it blended from 3D into reality and then back to 3D. They put so much effort into that, you know, real credit to them for those.
And there was a moment when they said, "Now we're going to go and watch the race, so let's hand over to the commentary box," and in that time they'd made a montage of the people getting to the grid, people on the grid.
Yep.
How did they do that so
fast?
I
don't know. The editing crew and whatever they've got back, presumably back in the UK, whatever they're beaming back, they're working really hard, and they've got the technology and they've got the talent to make it a really good season. I'm looking forward to what they're going to do next. They've set a bar that in some ways is unachievable because, you know, we're at the next race already within 7 days. And I don't know if they can keep it up for the next broadcast. However, it's so much better than ITV. It just doesn't matter.
And if this is what they start with, even if they can't keep it up all year, in like the long-term future, it can only get better. Fantasy Racers. So I don't know if anyone's had a chance to check out the league.
The Fantasy Racers League. Mm-hmm. I haven't, actually.
Really?
I can't say that I'm that interested. I'm bored of it already.
Are you now?
Is it over yet? Did we win?
I did.
Go on, what did you win?
Well, I'm leading at the moment.
How the flipping hell.
I'm first in our league and I'm second in the overall league.
Get out of here.
It's amazing.
You?
Yep.
Miss Sandbagger?
Yep.
Let me just take this into context because I'm not too sure I've got my head around this. How many teams are in the Side Podcast League?
Last time I checked, it was 462.
And of those 462, how many did you beat?
Well, there's a bunch of us. I'm not sure exactly how many, maybe 10, that are all on joint points.
Right. In first place?
Yeah.
So you beat 452?
Yeah.
People, with your selection of fantasy racer teams, the people that you chose out of your own sweet little head.
Yeah, why are you sounding so surprised?
Have you any idea how badly you did last year?
Yes.
Do you remember? Do you remember the title? 119th in our own league?
Yeah.
That was you. How can you possibly be up there?
It won't last.
That is beyond staggering. Also, Pit Lane Fnatic, a league you joined last week.
Yeah, I'm leading them too.
I bet they're really pleased you joined in, aren't they?
I'm actually legitimately leading them because no one else got the same amount of points.
So you're leading the Pit Lane Fnatic league. And, yep. And in the main league, thousands and thousands of teams. Do you know where you are?
I'm second with a load of other people.
Of joined all second. Of those thousands and thousands and thousands of... You've ruined Fantasy Races. Do you know? You've just ruined it all. That's it. You've now ruined it. You've ruined it for me and you've ruined it for everybody else because you're me a sandbagger.
But you said I had to play properly, so I did.
You're taking it too seriously.
Ugh.
We don't win stuff.
Well, do you know where you are? You certainly don't win stuff.
No, I don't know where I am. I was a bit upset after...
Would you like to know where you are?
Is it higher than you?
No.
No, not interested.
189.
Shush. 100 and what?
189.
That's barely inside the top 200.
I got 828 points. Lou in the comments just pointed out 13 people got the same amount.
Goodness gracious.
You got 560.
That's more than I got most races last year. There must be more points in it this year.
There's not much point running through the top five this week because we all got the same points and it's in entry list order. That's why I'm at the top.
Okie dokie.
It's not because I'm special or anything.
You are special.
However, the five of us at the top, although it could be any of the 13, we are now leading the top private leagues.
Wait, again?
The five of us have made it so that SciPodcast are top of the private leagues.
So SciPodcast is carrying on from where we left off last year.
Yep.
You've taken the baton from Jordan and you are running with it.
We're leading with 828. Then Force India F1, that's a league, not the team, I'm assuming.
Okay.
They've got 815.2. And then Autosport are... arch enemies.
Wow.
They've got 800.4.
So Autosport are in third place.
At the moment. It's a great start for us, but obviously it's really early days.
Goodness me. Exciting stuff.
You know the driver prices change this year?
I am familiar with that concept. We talked about it not so long ago.
Yeah. There's been a little bit of confusion in the comments recently.
Major confusion, actually. I woke up to find lots and lots of confused people trying to work out exactly what had changed in 2009 and what those changes mean.
Yes. Well, thankfully... Danny, the lovely Danny from Fantasy Races, he's actually come along and explained it to us.
By the way, where was he in our league?
RG has just found Danny in the league. He's 245th with 503 points. Rubbish!
245th in his own game.
In his own game. Most of the confusion is coming from the fact that there is actually a transfer fee, and I actually wasn't aware of this, and I expect a lot of people weren't. It does say it on the page, but it's like small print.
Okay.
So maybe no one noticed it. And so people were a bit surprised when prices change when you sell your driver. Anyway, Danny explained the situation, so I thought I would share this with you just
please
so everyone knows.
Do. I shall listen carefully.
He said, just to clarify, when you view your current drivers on the View Drivers page, their values already include the 0.2 million transfer penalty, so show you what you will get if you were to transfer them out. The reason for the transfer penalty was down to the fact that people who didn't have access to their computer over the weekend or did something other than log straight on after the race, who would do that? I don't know. I'm there hitting refresh. Would be at a disadvantage to those who were quick off the mark and they could quickly switch to all the successful drivers and bank the profit.
Okay, that makes sense. That does make sense to me.
It makes sense. So I think the problem was people weren't sure why the prices look different to what you actually pay.
Yep.
Because as soon as you pick a driver, once it appears in your selection list, it's at the lower price with 0.2 taken off.
Right, understood. That all makes sense. Well, we're going to have some changes. If we look at Formula One, we're all coping with those changes. What we need for Fantasy Races, we need Red Bull to make a 3D animation and Vettel to voice it to explain it to us. Then we'll be clued up.
So talking of the price changes, Button went up drastically, as you would imagine.
Goodness me.
He was 6.3 million and currently 8.1.
Quality.
Rosberg, Kubica, Barrichello and Vettel all went up. Trulli stayed the same and the others all went down. Raikkonen fell the most. 0.6 million downwards.
What a bargain.
That's what happens when you crash into the wall. He doesn't cost 0.6 million.
Oh.
He fell to 11.9.
Oh, he was just that high, much higher. Okay, I still can't afford him. Housekeeping. So earlier this weekend, we had a chat with Joe in Melbourne. He was in a hotel room just before leaving to go to the racetrack.
Joe.
Joe Sayward.
Yes.
From GrandPrix.com.
The second time we've talked to him.
Yeah, he came back. We didn't scare him off. And it was a pleasure to speak to him because obviously he's on the other side of the world. There's all the time differences and everything going on. He's a really busy man. He took time out to talk to us and to give us the vibe from the paddock. And really, I just wanted to say, if you haven't caught up with it, if you haven't checked it, if you've missed that in the feed, well worth going back and having a listen to it. Because as with the first podcast he did, a lot of the information contained within it is actually quite timeless. It's not something that's, you know, race relevant. And
we talked a little bit about the diffusers, but obviously that hasn't finished yet.
At all, no changes there.
And then a lot of it was, you know, about travelling and what you do when you're in Melbourne and
yeah.
How it is being there.
What it's like being in the paddock and being a professional Formula One journalist. And it's the inside line from Joe. So really, I just wanted to big that up and plug it. The other thing was, I think he really appreciated the feedback that he got from the first show.
Yep.
It was nice to get some interaction, both in the comments on our site and also the comments on his site. And really, just wanted to mention that feedback is always good.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's considering coming back again to talk to us again. So, you know, if you like what you hear, then let us know about it.
If there's any questions, at some point we're going to take questions, hopefully maybe if he's around in Malaysia. If you want to leave some questions in the comments, if you want to put some comments to him on his blog. The other thing we're sort of requesting is because it's kind of getting lost in the F1 debrief show.
Yeah, at the moment we've packaged it as F1 debrief, but if it becomes a regular thing, we will probably want to make it its own show.
In which case, what should we call it?
We need a title.
So we're kind of requesting feedback and ideas of what could we call the Joe show?
And I mean, we don't want to sway anyone, but we've got a lot of shows that already start with F1.
Goodness, too many.
We've got a lot of shows that start with Side Pod.
Yes, and also D, because there's Debrief and Digest, and I never know which is which.
Yes.
So if you have any creative or smart ideas about what you might call a podcast,
because we've run out,
we are completely spent on that front. And then we'll hopefully, if we can convince Joe to come back, we'll turn it into an actual regular feature and an own show in its own right. And, you know, if you could do that, well, that would be much appreciated.
In the last couple of shows, I've been talking up the F1 Digest 2009 season preview.
Yep.
And I left that right until the last minute.
Yeah.
Crammed them in.
Things got a bit swamped in the podcast feed. I hope people haven't been overawed with the amount of stuff you've been putting out.
Well, we were a bit worried that actually no one would ever have time to listen to everything.
It was a podcast a day for a whole week.
Well, the season preview finished, so now we are right into F1 Digest.
Into the heart of it.
Grand Prix coverage.
So four podcasts during a race weekend.
Yes.
Thursday preview, Friday free practice, Saturday qualifying, and Sunday race coverage. Same as last year.
Yep.
Better, I think. You've revamped the concept.
I've made a few tweaks here and there just to try and make it more interesting for people and for me to make it.
Yeah, and you're requesting feedback and conclusions from people in the comments.
Last year, at the beginning of the year, I would pick out good comments from each live commenting session.
Sure, that's when we had about 200 comments per live commenting session.
Yeah, I think, I mean, what did we say? We've had like 10,000 comments or something this weekend.
Getting on for 10,000. I don't know if we're going to make 10,000 in 4 days, but it's a significant increase in the number of comments on Side Podcast.
If I had to go through all of those, there would never be a show.
No.
So what I am asking instead is, after each session, just sum up what you think in a couple of sentences.
Leave it in the comments feed.
You can leave it in the comments or you can email me, christine@sidepodcast.com, and then I will read it out in the show, because it's always good to get what other people think about it.
Yeah.
About what they've seen.
And I think it works really well. I'm loving the shows you're putting out. Amazing race coverage. I mean, we've talked a little bit about the race and the things were most interesting to us, but if you just want to know what happened in the race, the whole story of the race, the whole story of the race weekend, F1 Digest is king.
So I think that's it for this show.
We made it.
It's been a really tiring weekend.
Oh,
but brilliant.
So worth it.
Yeah. And we'll be back doing exactly the same thing next weekend.
Live commenting from Friday.
Yes.